in looking at this topic this morning, I was reminded of a conversation I had with a single mom like 6 or 7 years ago. And I was venting my frustrations with my husband, about my husband, to my friend. And she was just listening, thinking about it. And then she said, "You know, it's really hard for me to hear you complain about your husband when I'm thinking of all the things you have to be thankful for. Number one, that you have a husband that loves you so much." And she listed several things. And I was like, this, like I said, this was 6 or 7 years ago. And it really impacted just that one statement. You know, you have a husband that loves you so much. And here I just complain and complain and complain. And so it really reshuffled my thinking. It was really great. It was a good pan in the face to be realize that I was focusing on the things that were frustrating me and forgetting all the wonderful things about my husband and why I fell in love with him in the first place. So it really helped me to, you know, he helps me so much as a parent too. It helped me to appreciate that we are a team and be thankful for him. So it just reminded me of that. And so in the spirit of starting off with 2:17, in the spirit of gratitude, I just thought, can a couple of you share something you are thankful about your spouse? Anybody have anything off the top of your head? I will start. I just wanted to say that I'm thankful my husband's always supported me in being a stay-at-home mom. That's a huge thing for our family, and he's always totally supported me. I'm really thankful. I realize that that's a big deal. So anybody else? Just a couple of people. Anybody? Thanks.
There's a lot of great things about my kid, but a good sleeper is not one of his strengths. And so my husband does a really good job of, like, on his days off or when he goes in late, to, like, spot me a nap or give me a break so that I have some sanity, which is really nice. So he sacrifices a lot of sleep for me.
That is awesome. I love it. Got one?
I was just going to say that my husband's really good at serving, and so he'll, like, I took the kids out to see a movie and came home, and all of our Christmas decorations were put away, and that was something I was going to, you know, need to do the next day, and so he took care of it, and so just things like that, he's really willing to help out.
That's awesome. Thank you, honey. One more? Anybody? Yay.
My husband cares really, really deeply about taking care of us and our family, and I know that it can be a really difficult thing for him at times, but he just cares so much about each of us, and I've just been really struck by that in the past couple days.
Wonderful. Thanks, guys. So, yeah, just carry that spirit of gratitude for your husband into 2017. Today we have Mary Beth Gladwell with us today, and she's known the Lord a long time, 30 years, or is it you come around that? Yeah, so longer than that. So we're glad to have her experience here. She's a home church leader, and she has 3 kids and now 4 grandkids, so she's in a new era. And she's also, a little interesting fact, she's the librarian down at Harambe. And she's also taught a marriage class here. It's an awesome marriage class. She's taught it for over 20 years. So it is a fantastic class. And it's starting, actually, February 15th. So if that's something you're interested in, get the word out to your friends. So that's coming up. So let me pray, and we'll turn it over. God, we just thank you for how you do provide for us in our families, thank you for our spouses, and just I do pray that you'll help each of us just to be aware of all the things we are thankful for and not let the things that irritate us divide us or, you know, just get us into a spirit of criticism that permeates our whole household. Thank you that we can change that and be grateful. So I just really pray you will speak through Mary Beth. You know all the people in this room. You know what they're going through right now. And I pray that you'll use Mary Beth to encourage them and give them some wisdom in their parenting. Amen.
So happy New Year. Mostly happy the holidays are over, at least for somebody that's a routine person. For me, it's like I can't wait until January 2nd. So small crowd. It'd be cool if we could all sit at the tables and just talk, but I guess that's not possible. So we'll do the best we can, kind of spread out. So the topic for this morning is resources for good parenting, right? So your spouse and your close friends. And I thought I'd sort of start out by stating the obvious, which is that parenting is difficult. So I think last month, if you were here, Bev DeLashmet, that was actually her topic. It was on sacrificial parenting. And she started off her talk by showing a YouTube video. And it was an interview, right? It was an interview where these people were coming to interview for this job. And so as the interview went on, they were asking about the job, and they're like, okay, what are the hours? Well, it's 24/7, you know. What's the pay? Really, there's not much pay to speak of. How about vacation time? Surely. Not really. My favorite part of that, if you watch it on YouTube, was they're like, what about breaks and mealtime? Well, actually, there's not much of that either. And actually, during your meals, you can eat after your subject eats, but usually you'll be standing up. So, and I just love that because it rang so true. But the truth is, and you guys know this, it's probably why you're here this morning, is that good parenting does require sacrifice. And I'm stating the obvious, but I just think it's so important to be reminded of this. And that sacrifice, it means pain. And I bring that up because I think there's something inside of us and there's something in our culture that's constantly telling us. We hear this voice somehow. It says, if you got it down right, if you could figure it out, if you could redo the formula, you could take the pain out of this. And it's just not true, not in the world that we live in. It's never going to happen. And so to be a good parent means that you're going to sacrifice, and that means you're going to experience pain. And I wish, you know, like this could be like the running ticket through this talk and through our lives, that we'd have this ongoing reminder, because without it, we begin to think I'm doing something wrong or he's doing something wrong. And I think that thinking can just lead you down a really destructive and very unhelpful path. So I just think it's important to remember that good parenting requires sacrifice, and there's going to be pain in that. But the good news is that it's not meaningless pain, right? It's pain that actually has the potential, at least, to be very productive. And when you think about this, you know, a lot of us can think even, you know, just into life experiences. And we look back on the stuff that we gave ourselves to the most fully, that were really difficult and kind of costly. And we realized, man, that was one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. I'm so glad I did it. But more than that, there just seems to be something built into the way God's made us, where there's a connection between laying down our lives and sacrificing, and that producing something very beneficial, potentially in us and in other people. You read through the Gospels, and Jesus talked about this on a lot of different levels. Speaking of his own sacrifice, he said, you know, speaking kind of metaphorically, he said, unless a grain falls into the earth and dies, it remains by itself alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. What he was talking about was that his ultimate sacrifice, which was to die on the cross to pay for our sins, that led the way for us then to have real life and to be brought back into a relationship with God. That payment for sin was the thing that made that way for us to be reconnected with God. It was the ultimate sacrifice, but the outcome of it was so, so amazing, right? So you read about this connection throughout the scriptures. We see it in what God did for us through Christ. But Jesus talked about this in a little different way, talking about a lifestyle, this kind of laying down your life, undergoing pain on behalf of another person. This was after he had washed his disciples' feet at the Last Supper. He said, if then the Lord and the teacher washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Another version says, if you do these things, that is, take the humblest posture, do the most unglamorous and sometimes painful thing for another person, you are fulfilled if you do these things. So this is the teaching that we see in the scriptures. Again, like I said, some of us can look back and see places where we've experienced this in our lives. So the point I'm making is that, yes, good parenting requires sacrifice, and that sacrifice means pain, but the outcome can be so beneficial and so productive, both for us and for the people that we're being sacrificial for, in this case, for our children. So I just want to start there because I think it's just a critical reminder, and one we don't hear from the world around us. So that's the first thing. So the other thing is, again, just starting off with the basic facts, which is that good parenting is sacrificial and difficult. It's important for us to remember that we're not in this alone, that God has given us all kinds of resources in this endeavor. And I think that that's a real comforting thing. The first and probably most important resource we receive, if we've received that gift of his sacrifice on the cross on our behalf, is he gives us his own spirit, right? To indwell us, which is a mind-boggling thing when you think about it. So we have his spirit to indwell us. He guides us then. He empowers us to actually be sacrificial way beyond anything we thought we were capable of. That is a really sweet, amazing resource. But he gives us these other resources as well. And the ones I want to talk about this morning, I want to talk about the resources that we receive in our spouse, and I want to talk about the resource that we have in our long-term friendships. And I kind of focused on these two things because I feel like both of these tend to be both sort of, we don't pay as much attention to them, and because of that, I think we don't really receive the value from these that I think that God wants us to. So that's where I want us that's what I want us to think about this morning are these two particular resources. So I want to start by talking about the resource we have in our spouse. And again, I know I'm seeing a couple brave men that have shown up, maybe one so far. So you're welcome to be here. Obviously, it's great that you're here. Prepare to be encouraged, I hope, anyway, and feel free to use anything I say, you know, as an argument down the road with your wife. You have my blessing. But this is mostly directed at moms this morning. So let's just start talking about our spouse. And starting right here, I think at the most basic place, which is recognize and be grateful for what they do bring to our families. And again, why do I bring this up? Because I think that this is something that is super easy for us to overlook. And I think it's easy for us to overlook for a whole bunch of reasons. But I think one that I think is one that maybe we should take note of is that I think a lot of us have a tendency to kind of live on the negative side. And I think maybe some of us are predisposed that way by temperament. I know that I am. But I think that there may be just something in us, and I don't mean to be offensive, but as women, that causes us to tend to drift in this direction, and I think that we should be sobered by that notion. If you read through the Proverbs, you can't help but to notice that there's some warnings in there along this line. You know, the author of Proverbs has a lot to say, both about, you know, like what the profile of a really great wife looks like, but he has a lot to say about sort of the negative things that a wife can bring into a marriage, and it makes for a really sobering and, I think, interesting study to read sort of through that. And chapter 21 actually has not one but two of these little warnings. And he says earlier, I'm going to show you the one he says later in chapter 21, but he says, it's better to live in the corner of an attic than with a contentious wife in a lovely home. I love that. I think that's the New Living Translation. What he's saying is, your house might look like Martha Stewart lives there. But if the atmosphere in the home is one of contention and negativity, the author of Proverbs says, you know, it'd be better just to throw your bedroll down in the corner of the attic because you're going to be a lot more comfortable there than in this atmosphere, right? And then he goes on to say, it's better to live alone in the desert than with a crabby and complaining wife, right? So I bring this up because I think that there is a tendency for some of us to go kind of dark. And I just want us to be aware of that tendency and I guess ultimately to try and lean against that. That's sort of my goal in bringing this up this morning, right? To lean against that. So a while back, I ran across this article Oh, yeah, I want us to lean against having a skewed perspective and maybe to challenge our own expectations. I ran across this article in Time magazine. So this was back now. This was in August of 2011. And it really caught my eye. The subtitle is Chore Wars, and I think it says, "Let it go, men and women basically do the same amount of work." Right? And it really, because it was the cover article, caught my eye, read the article, and then I've done some research since then. And if you Google chore wars, or if you Google, like, men and women work at home, child-rearing men and women, you can pull up a lot of different articles. And the truth is that depending on who you're reading, you kind of read a different perspective on it. But the research, Pew did a bunch of research back, I think it was in 2010, and the research is pretty much everyone does agree at this point. And that is that men and women now, their total work output is almost completely even. So it comes down to, and what they do in these studies, there's this whole field of research where they have people fill out these time diaries. And when it comes to the discrepancy at home, they always, needless to say, they always go to full-time husbands and full-time working wives, women that are working outside the home for obvious reasons. And they fill out these time diaries. And what they have found is now, well, when they did the research, it comes down to a total of a difference of 53 minutes a day during the work week that women are, in fact, working more total work hours. So that includes chores, child-rearing stuff, and work outside the home, 53-minute discrepancy. So that amounts to about 5 hours a week because it's Monday through Friday, right? But here's the point. That when you read through these studies, what you find is even though the discrepancy is not that great, that women's perception of the difference is way bigger. That women across the board don't recognize that it's not that small, and they see it as a much bigger difference. And for me, that just sort of resonates with, I guess, how I am a little bit, and how I think a lot of women tend to be, that we tend to maybe focus on the negative and don't appreciate maybe what the facts really are. So as you read through some of this research, well, there were three things that really jumped out at me when it came to this issue of our perceptions and maybe skewed expectations. And what jumped out at me was the frustration women had in these three different areas. The first one was their frustration that men weren't doing enough. And again, like I said, the research makes it pretty clear that, in fact, that the discrepancy is very small. But the perception that they weren't doing enough just comes out over and over again when you read through this literature. The second thing is that they aren't doing it right. They aren't doing it right. I read this one. It was, you know, not a super scientific study that was done, but they pulled these couples, right? And they asked the men and the women about their own attitudes toward their own parenting. And this one small study, it was like 95% of the dads said that they did feel good about their roles as fathers. But in that same survey, when they polled the women, 48% said that they felt good about the jobs that their husbands were doing as fathers. And it just, again, it spoke to me of, and there's probably other factors there, but it's like that tendency that some of us have, it's like if it's not done our way, it's not done the right way. It's not just that we're different and that's okay, but it's like if it's not done my way, then I'm not happy with it, you know? So of course, most of us moms would never think to dress the toddler in a striped top and plaid pants or something, and we'd have the wherewithal to know to take them out of the onesie that they slept in all night, you know, before they go see the doctor or whatever, you know? And we'd never think of taking them to McDonald's twice in the same day, right? But, okay, so there's the difference. But for a lot of us, at least what came out in the research, especially that one article I read, was that there's just so much frustration on the part of the women. They're not doing it my way. And because they're not doing it my way, it's not the right way. And then, my bigger point, missing the good that the husbands and the dads are bringing to our families. And the third thing, and this was the thing I thought was super interesting, And I had a hard time putting a phrase on this, but the one of the frustrations that came out as you read through these articles is that these moms are very frustrated that the men aren't engaged in the same way as they are. So I guess this is sort of a bit of bad news, but the truth is that one of the things that research has found is that when the dads go off the clock, they really go off the clock, all right? And when it comes to leisure time, the leisure time that men have as fathers is purer than the leisure time that women have. So I didn't know this, but there's such a thing as contaminated free time. So, and that means that when you sit down and you're reading your book, this was the example they gave, when you're reading your book on the couch or trying to watch a show and you have your toddler in the next room having their quiet time, when they call you to come and put the straw in the juice box, that's now contaminated free time. And women, by and large, have a lot more of that. There's also something called fractured free time. And as far as I can tell, what that means is that when we're, as moms, off the clock, it means that we're not necessarily completely disengaged mentally from what's going on with our families and our kids. And there was frustration on behalf of a lot of these women that that's how their minds are working and their husbands' minds aren't working this way. And because of that, it just breeds this sense of what they're doing is not enough. And I would argue that, you know, you may be married to a guy that's like the world's greatest multitasker and is able to have all these plates spinning at once, super aware of everything, but chances are you're not. And conversely, that's something that you're really good at. And you're dialed in, even when you're out with your girlfriends, you're dialed in with the fact that tomorrow is the parent-teacher conference. And you know it's at 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, your husband, probably not as much. You know, when you are, you know, going out for your, at the gym, working out, you know, it flashes through your mind. What are we having for dinner tonight? And then what are we going to have tomorrow night? And do I actually have those ingredients in the house? And again, these women would say, well, my husband doesn't think this way. And because my husband doesn't think this way, he's not fully engaged. And there would breed frustration rather than a focus on what they do bring. And I think that that's just, again, I would argue that that's just how we're wired. My kids are long gone. But I'm here to tell you that they're on my mind every day. I think about my grandkids every day. My husband's a great dad and a great father. It's just not the same. Our minds are different. And I would argue that there's something in the way God's designed us to that effect. So I just think it's important to realize that maybe we have a little bit, we can get off track here and have the wrong perspective and the wrong expectation. So I want us to think now about what they do bring. Do they provide physically for the family by working? And I bring this up because this is something that doesn't get a lot of press in the world that we live in, you know? And maybe you're married to that one guy that loves, loves, loves his job. And, you know, it's an outlet for all of his creativity. He is compensated perfectly. He receives all the respect he deserves, you know? And if he's got that kind of job, that is awesome. And probably most of us, hopefully most of us, are the jobs that our husbands have, there's some favorable things about their jobs that they like. It'd be terrible if there was nothing that they liked about their jobs. But here's the point I want to make, that most of our husbands get up and go to work day after day out of a commitment to us and out of love for our families and to provide and care for them. And I just think it's real easy to sort of gloss over that. In the Time magazine article, one of the things that they teased out was the tension and the conflict that men feel over this, their desire to be responsible at work and their responsibility at home. And again, this was a totally secular perspective, but it really spoke to me. It said, you know, a lot of these guys feel this tension about being responsible to family and to their work. Truth is, even though it's getting better, most jobs really don't care that you have a kid or two or three at home. Certainly it isn't their focus. Their focus is what you're supposed to be doing at the job, right? Well, your husband goes there, knows that that's the expectation, but also wants to be responsible and do right by you and your kids. That provides attention. you know, there's that tension between what their wives expect and what they're actually able to do. That's a realistic thing. And it's something that they have to live with. Furthermore, there's this tension a lot of guys have about their own career expectations, aspirations, you know, this desire to want to grow and get better and, you know, provide maybe in a better way for their family, and against that, their own concept of the ideal parent. These are tensions that I think go in under the radar that I don't think about. And what it amounts to is their sacrifice for you and for us, and that's okay, you know. Good parenting requires sacrifice, right? That's okay. But I just think it's important for us to think it through every now and then, you know, that this is something that they bring to the family that we benefit from. And that without this, you know, there would be a huge deficit with in our families and for our kids. What other responsibilities do they handle? This is going to look different in everybody's homes, right? Are they the one that manages the finances? Do they pay the bills? Do they deal with budgeting issues? I know that's not the case in a lot of families. In some families, it is. And you might think, yeah, well, my husband's just like a money guy. That's what he's good at. And I get that. But I also know, like, so my husband handles that for us. I know that when that time comes around the month where he has to check and make sure everything's gone through and everything's clear and all that, there's lots of things he'd rather do than sit down and do that. Right? And he does that out of his commitment to me and to our family. And, you know, I benefit from that. Do they manage the car maintenance? Do they take care of insurance? Do they maintain the house, the yard landscaping? I know a lot of families it's not that way, and that's cool. I know at least one person in here got a drill for Christmas. Am I right, Tanya? So come on. I think that's awesome. But what do they bring, right? Do they deal with the landlord when something's busted, when there's something that's not going right? Are they the ones at grocery shop? Do they do the laundry? Do they do the cooking? You know, these are things that I think that we kind of take for granted, but what they do is they are there, maybe behind the scenes, but they're adding to the stability and the functionality of our families. And if they were taken out of the equation, it would be a huge loss. So I think it's worth, again, paying attention to. Do they lead your family, our family, spiritually? And again, Kim mentioned I teach this marriage class, and one thing that's come up over the years is lots and lots of women have a lot of frustration here. They're like, I really, really wish, you know, my husband would lead more spiritually. And I get that, you know. But a couple of things I think that maybe we don't keep in mind when it comes to this is that many of our husbands didn't grow up in Christian homes, so they didn't have anything like this even modeled to them. Or maybe they grew up in a Christian home and it really wasn't a good situation, and so they're trying to forge their own way. You know, plus I think sometimes we're in danger of comparing them to like spiritual giants, and it's like we get this grass is, you know, always greener thing going on, and we think, oh, well, you know, sure, they lead, but they don't lead like so-and-so or this person. And again, that is going to take us down a really unproductive, unhelpful path. But where do they lead spiritually? How about, do they pray with your kids? That's engaging on a spiritual level, and that is modeling that your kid's going to remember. You know, do they read them Bible stories? Do they tell them Bible stories? That's spiritual engagement that's going to impact your kid, and it's significant. Do they model a commitment to the word and body of Christ? What do I mean by that? I mean, you know, do they, you know, after a long day's work, do they make sure they're out the door on their way to Bible study or to meet with someone to study the Bible or to do some kind of service above and beyond, right? You know, working those 40 hours. And by the way, hopefully you guys know this, most jobs require way more than 40 hours a week. That's been the way it's been for a long time. I was just thinking about that in terms of our husbands working and how, like for me, I would always be watching the clock, you know, is he 5 minutes late, not appreciating the fact that, you know, from his boss's perspective, you know, 45, 50 hours a week is hardly even cutting it. Anyway, after a long day's work, are they willing to, you know, like I said, meet their commitments to getting underneath God's word, learning God's word in a home church setting, connecting with people in God's community? What is that? That's modeling to your kids, a spiritual commitment, and that is super significant. What about the unique ways they engage with our kids? And I think this is the one area that gets tons of press in the world we live in today. You know, so, you know, do they have their daddy dates? That's awesome. That's wonderful. You know, do they engage in projects with your kids or for your kids, building the clubhouse, building the rocket ship, whatever? That's awesome. You know, what about just the physical contact that dads bring to the whole family? That's something that you might take for granted, but it's really an important thing and something that probably wouldn't go on if their influence wasn't in our homes. There was a study done some years ago now about just even the benefits of dads throwing their toddlers up in the air. It has something to do with brain development. It only works if you catch the kid on the way down, though, although I'm here to tell you they can survive if they get dropped. But that's something they're bringing to our families, and it's significant. But the last thing I want to talk about when it comes to really appreciating and taking advantage of the resources that we have in our spouse is that our spouses really do have valuable insight and understanding when it comes to our kids. And I bring it up because, especially for those of us who have the privilege of maybe being at home full-time with our kids or at home way more than our spouses are, I just think it's real easy to begin to believe that we're the experts on our kids, and the tendency to dismiss anything that they might want to throw into the mix, I think, is just there. And I feel like I know that I shot myself in the foot, and it really wasn't helpful for our kids for me to not be as engaged on this as I could have been, because they have a different but valuable perspective, and it's really on us to welcome that and to listen to what they have to say. And it's really kind of the height of arrogance to not. And the scriptures are full of this. I know you guys know that, right? So in Proverbs 12, it says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise woman," I kind of changed it to woman, "is she who listens to counsel," right? And again, it's on us to kind of stop ourselves, even when their perspective is so different, and to listen to what they have to say. We believe that, you know, if we believe this is God's word and what we read in the scriptures is really God's will, that family was God's invention. He wanted to bring a man and a woman together, you know, to make that family unit, that God's brought us together with our particular spouse in a sovereign way, then it all the more reason why I think it's on us to stop and listen to what they have to say. I mean, maybe it's just me that was that way, that wasn't all that receptive to what my husband had to say, but I think that there's real resource there. So, and I was thinking, okay, well, what's an example of this? And a really embarrassing story kind of came to mind. And the older I've gotten, the more embarrassing it is. But if it's going to be helpful, I'll share it with you guys. So like I said, I kind of consider myself an expert on most things. And so, when it came to our kids, it was, you know, obviously because I was there with them all the time, and my husband wasn't. I was not as receptive as I should have been. Let's just say that to what he had to say. But there was one time. So, and that was the time that I remembered. So here's the embarrassing part. So in one of my kids' classes, there was one of these children that you probably know that was just super, super, super hard to handle. I mean, this kid would insert himself and just, like, take over. Adult, kid, didn't matter. Annoying to everyone, child and adult alike. And that part is true, gospel truth right there. But here's where it gets embarrassing. I got it in my mind that what needed to happen was this kid needed to be taught a lesson, and he needed to be taught a lesson sooner rather than later. And that what really needed to happen is that one of my kids needed to give this kid a smackdown and teach him not to be as intensely annoying as he was. Okay, so far it's not that embarrassing, but so then what I did was I actually went and had sort of a clandestine meeting with the principal of the school and got the principal off the radar to agree to my plan. Then I went to the classroom teacher and again, you know, got her to agree to my plan, off again the record, you know. So it was like all systems go, everybody knows this kid needs to be taught a lesson, I got a plan here. And for some reason, I ran it by my husband. I was like, so here's what I'm thinking, you know, because clearly this kid needs to be taught a lesson. And he looked at me and said, are you crazy? You're going to give permission to our kid who already has an anger problem to let loose on this kid? Are you insane? Don't do that. So I was like, And for once, because we have a big God, I listened. And so as it turned out, what happened was shortly after that conversation, this part I'm clear on, I was in their classroom before school started, and this kid, like, you know, ditched in front of my kid, you know, got on the computer, you know, before my kid did, and was just, you know, being super annoying and super out of control, and without any prompting on my part, my kid went over and got him in this neck, throat chokehold and started choking the life out of him. So I obviously put an end to that, but the point was if I had given my kid the go-ahead and encouraged him to beat this kid up, I'd probably be in jail, and so would my kid, you know, at this point. The point is that our husbands have insight and an understanding. That part, that story is pretty out there, but on an ongoing basis, I think we're tempted to dismiss what they have to say, and we shoot ourselves in the foot. This is a resource that God's given us. So they work. You know, they contribute to our families in these functional ways. They bring spiritual leadership in some ways to our families. They provide this one-on-one engagement with our kids. And I would argue that they have a perspective and an understanding that's super important with our kids as well. So that's the resource of our husbands. Now I want to go on and talk about the second area. And this has to do with the resource that we have in these long-term friendships. So I'm talking here now, ladies, about, you know, friendships that go back a length of time, people that know you, have been there with you over the course of years, maybe 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, if you're as lucky as I am, 40 and 50 years, people that have seen you at your worst, have been there for your triumphs. We're talking long-term friendships. And I'm here to say that it's really hard to put a price tag on these friendships. That they're invaluable. And I mean that in the truest sense of the word, that these friendships will save your life. And the ripple effect when it comes to your family and your kids is super significant, and I think that this is one of these resources that we tend to maybe gloss over, take for granted, let slip away, and I'm here to encourage you not to do that this morning. And before we talk about some of the great things that these friendships bring to us and to our families, I just want to talk quickly about, you know, some of the things that get in the way of maintaining these long-term friendships. The first and obvious one is life. Right? We are crazy busy. Crazy busy. Anybody in here not busy? Yeah, you wouldn't have the guts to raise your hand because, yeah, right, Lindsay. We are crazy busy, and the people that we're trying to maintain these friendships with, they're crazy busy too. And just when you think that you got it figured out, you got a plan in place that's working, something else in life comes along to knock it out of kilter, and you're back to square one trying to figure out how to make this work. So life is constantly coming at us and challenging our schedules and challenging how we're going to make this work. Additionally, we have lots of relationships to maintain. We have our spouses. We have our kids. We have our extended families. You know, for those of us who are involved in Christian community, we have all those relationships. We have relationships in the workplace. Tons and tons of relationships to maintain. And as far as I know, you know, we got 24 hours, 7 days a week to make this happen. And additionally, if we are people who are committed to following Christ, then rather than have this idea of I can get to the place where I can kind of shrink my sphere of relationships down to where they're manageable, and then I'll have more time for the people that, you know, I really want to spend my time with, on some levels that's really not going to happen if we continue to follow Christ, because he's left us here for a reason, and that reason is to go and to take his good news out to people who've not heard it. And then once these people have come to faith in Christ, to bring them into our communities, and then for us to begin to build relationships with them, to help establish them, to help them grow in their understanding of Christ and his word. So rather than our world's getting smaller if we're going to follow Christ, the truth is he's going to be adding to that pool of relationships. So you're like, how do we make this work? In reality, this, how do we make this happen? And my fear is that we're tempted to think, you know, we got 24 hours in a day and all these other things that are vying for our time and energy, that we're tempted to think, I'm just not going to make this a priority. I got too much going on. And I'm here to tell you, to do that is really a wrong-headed idea. Tempting, but really it's going to end up being something I think we regret in the long run. And that's because God has so much to bring to us and to our kids through these friendships. So here's something that God brings to us through these friendships, and probably a pretty obvious one, that he helps us shoulder the load. Have I mentioned that having kids and raising kids is hard? It is hard, right? It's really hard. One of the good things is that it's so hard that it hopefully it leads us to lean on Christ, and very specifically to lean on the people in our communities. And in that leaning on them to receive the grace and the energy and the encouragement to keep going forward. But I think very specifically, it's in these long-term friendships that God, in a very unique way, gives us a lightening of that load. And so it says to bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. Ladies, there's something about these long-term relationships where after these years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, the only way I can explain it is that your hearts become knit together. And so that struggle that you're having with the defiant toddler, you're really not having it on your own. Your friend's having it with you. You know, that difficulty that your child, your school-age child's having at school, you know, he's the bully or they're being bullied. You're not trying to sort it out on your own. But this friend that you have, you know that they're in there with you on it. This angsty teenager that you're trying to see through into adulthood, their hearts are knit with yours. And they're bearing this burden with you. That's enormous. That's an enormous resource. You have an understanding there that is, what it provides is a level of stability and strength that allows you to keep going forward. I don't know how else to explain it. And so we know it says in Romans to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those that weep. And yes, there are people that you've known for a couple years that are currently in your home church that do that with you. But I'm here to tell you it's these long-standing relationships that are going to provide this in a unique way. So this is one major thing that God gives us in these relationships. These relationships bring us needed course correction. So I hope you guys all know that you need course correction, and you need course correction when it comes to your kids and how you parent. And I hope that on some level that you agree in your heart that when it comes to your pride and your selfishness, that those things come with a cloaking device, that you miss it. And you need people to wade in there and say, I think you're off here. I think you need to rethink this. And I'm also here to tell you that wading in and talking to people about their parenting is the hardest thing that anyone will ever do. I'm old enough now to know how this works. And you can talk to people about their finances. It's a little uncomfortable. It's a little bit weird. But you can do it with some pain and discomfort. You can even wade in there and talk to them about their sex lives. Again, depending on who they are, it can be uncomfortable. you know, and a little bit painful. You wade in and talk to them about how they're doing by their kids. It's a whole different ball of wax. It makes sense. Your heart is tied in with your kid more than any other thing. So the cost here is real high. And to have a friend that's willing to wade in there and to deal with you on this level is, you cannot put a price tag on this. You know, and so the scriptures are replete, right, with this understanding that we receive this kind of input. Better is an open rebuke than love that's concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. It is so true, and it applies very much to this area of parenting. So it's funny because with my two best friends, in my mind, I have these two watershed conversations that I had with them when my kids were growing up. And they were like monumental to me. And for both of them, they can hardly remember them, you know. When I bring them up and I, you know, like, well, do you remember we were in German Village? We were on this street. And they're like, I kind of remember it. But the one was when my firstborn was little, you know. One of my friends, who I'm just here to tell you, is not inclined in this direction. But she felt so strongly that I was heading in the wrong direction that she was willing to wade in here. And she was just like, you know, I think you're leaning on Craig way too hard. You know, asking him to get up with all those feedings in the middle of the night, I think that that is not okay. Mind you, my husband was in school, working full-time and farming and very involved in fellowship at the time. And her whole point was, you can lay down when he lays down. Craig doesn't have that option. I think you need to lay off. And I was like, oh, it was like super painful, really awkward. I'm so glad she brought it up. You know, further down the road, my other friend, you know, I was in this battle of wills with one of my kids. It was terrible. It wasn't just that there was a battle of wills going on, but the tenor of our relationship was so negative. And it was negative because I couldn't get the kid to comply to what I wanted. So I went to my friend, you know, thinking she was going to shore me up and help me figure out tricks to get him to, you know, bend to my arbitrary rigidness. And she was like, you need to back off and you need to thank God that he's willing to fight with you. And I was like, what? And she's like, you know, basically she's like, you're being controlling and arbitrary and the tone is not good. And those to me redirected my course. And I am forever grateful for that. The women that I was in my home church with would have never, A, had the courage to confront me with something like that. You know, let alone they wouldn't have known some of the particulars enough. But these longstanding friends do have that. And so what they bring is just super important. They bring essential instruction for our kids. Look, you know, our culture, make no mistake, our culture is not going to get less confused about what it means to be a friend. This is just going to continue to get more confusing. And in my mind, even more disconnected from what a real friend is, right? What does it mean to be a friend? No, the person who that likes what you post on Instagram, that's not a friend. Somebody that writes something on your Facebook thing, that is not a friend, you know? There is, and I think one thing with the social media thing, one thing it proves is that there's something hardwired in us to be relational. But we would take it one step further to say it's not just being relational, but there is a component of friendship that has to do with the being with and the face-to-face. And for us who are Christians, we know that, you know, this was even modeled to us by God, who decided, you know, to not just to remain spirit, but God who was incarnate. And he came, it says, the Word or God became human and lived here on earth among us. There was that being with. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the only Son of God. There is that face-to-face component that is so important. So when we leave to go with, to be with our friend as we've committed to do, and our, you know, our kids are watching, it's instructional to them. This is what being a friend means. It means we spend time, right? And I think it also is really important because it teaches them that they're not the center of the universe.
It's a super important thing for our kids to learn. Do you guys know adults that didn't learn this? Are they fun to be with? They're awful to be with, right? And we want our kids to learn that they're not the center of the universe. And I think any time that we can teach them, yes, of course you're valuable. Yes, of course we invest in you. Of course you matter. But so do these other people. And that's why I have this commitment to go be with, you know, Aunt Lindsay or whoever every week. Or even though I know you want to have a second play date, but we can't do that right now because I've got to leave to go be with my friend Marion or whatever. That's real instruction for them. And it's what we see, ladies, that ends up impacting us so much more often than what we hear, that they're going to see that other people matter. So that kind of brings us to how do we do this? Again, given life, all these other relationships, the fact that God calls us to take our love out increasingly to more and more people, how do we do this? And you're going to talk about this in your discussion groups. And I know that a lot of you guys have been really good about this, but here's my whole point bringing this up this morning. I want us to realize that this needs to be a priority and not a luxury. And again, for those of us who are committed to this church, where we've tried to really stick to a New Testament model, which is having Christian community lived out in small groups, and these groups then taking the good news of God's forgiveness out to people, these people putting their faith in Christ and joining our groups getting bigger, our groups then splitting up to make room for more people. That means that maintaining these kinds of relationships is all the more important, right? Because even though we get close to these people and the groups that we're in, lots of times it isn't realistic to think that they're going to be our long-term friends. Some of them might end up being in that category. But it's all the more reason for that sense of stability, that sense of being understood and accepted and encouraged in the long run. We need that more and more. We need to make this a priority and not think of it as a luxury. And we need to be creative. Like I said, I think a lot of you guys are. I know a lot of you guys are deliberately in play groups with people that you have these relationships with. That gives you those touches, those extra touches through the week or through the month. I think that's great. I would challenge you to take it even further if you can, but we need to be creative. I know for me that's meant always, always, always having to be willing to switch things up, which is a challenge for someone with my personality type, but I'm grateful that I've learned that over the years. So just when, you know, one of my best friends moves into the neighborhood, makes it super convenient to get all this time, the other one moves away, right? So constantly, we've got to be willing to be creative and switch it up, and hopefully you guys will have good suggestions for each other in our groups. And then the last thing is that we really need to make this, I think, an area of prayer, knowing that it is God's will. Just as we know that family, right, was God's creation, he brings us together as a man and a woman to bring these, like, different kinds of strengths to our families, and there's resources in that. God really means to give us so much of his grace and his encouragement and his correction and his strength in these long-term relationships. So if we know that this is his will, we can pray with confidence knowing that he's going to help us figure out how to get this done. So again, hopefully you guys will come up with great ideas on how you've made this work in your little discussion group. So that was pretty much all that I had, I'm pretty sure. So these are your discussion questions are on this printout. And then I guess, you know, for a couple of minutes, I just want to open it up if anybody has questions or comments about any of this stuff this morning. This would be the time for us to do that. Lindsay. Oh, yeah.
So, Leon, I know you like books as much as I do, and books are kind of the opposite of relationships, but is there a book that, besides the Bible, that you've kind of went to for parenting and for some of these ideas?
That's a great question. I know a lot of people, and I haven't read it all the way through, have read A.G. Fernando's book on friendship, and they have found that really helpful. I swear, what's popping up in my mind, my slightly demented mind, is a book called The Friendships of Women. But I might be making that up. Other than that, quite honestly, I feel like here's the thing. So like in our community, in this church, one of the great things that we bring is that we don't shy away from the importance of commitment to one another in the body of Christ. And I think what I've talked about this morning, especially when it comes to friendships, is just sort of taking that one step further. And I don't know, I mean, I don't know that there that I've come across resources that hit it in exactly that same way. I'll think about it. If you have questions or comments, too, I have the standard Xenos email. It's Gladwell, glad and well, and m@xenos.org. You can write to me or whatever. But I'll think about that. If I can think of any resources, I'll get back with you, and then maybe I can get it to Sherry, and maybe we can put it out there somewhere. Does anybody else know of any? Okay, good question. What else? Here we go. You know of one?
Well,
sweet.
A little bit.
All right, cool.
Not fully, but some of the ideas. I read What is a Family by Edith Schaefer.
It's a great resource.
And she doesn't talk specifically about the deep friendships that you're referring to, but she really, in this really awesome way, paints a picture of being really committed to community.
Yes.
And to ministry.
So glad you brought that up.
But also maintaining the strength of the family at the same time.
That's great. What is a family?
So really, really helpful.
She talks about a family being a door that both locks on the inside and opens up. I think that's one of her things.
Yeah, a door that opens but also has a lock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's really great. That book was so influential to me and to a lot of us older gals that are in this fellowship.
Yeah, I really, really liked it.
Because like you said, she maintains a super focused commitment to her husband and her kids. But those guys really understood how God had called them to take his word out to people that didn't know about Jesus. Yep. And they were super faithful to that.
Yeah, and great. She talked a lot about... she did speak about her marriage, too, and being grateful for Francis's involvement with their kids. Like, he would take them on trips around Europe, which, you know, we can't do that, but...
Right.
It's pretty cool.
You could probably do some, like, you know, internet version of it, though, you know?
So I haven't read this book, but I'm about to, and I've heard it's good, but there's a book called Love and Honor, specifically about just the husband and wife relationship. And, you know, how we as wives are called to honor our husbands and kind of practically what that looks like. And then from their perspective, called to love us and what that looks like. So
do you know who wrote it?
I don't. Not off the top of my head. But
not to be confused with Love and Respect. That's another book.
Oh, it might be Love and Respect.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's written by a guy named Egerich.
Okay.
That's and what I always say when it comes to reading books is always read it with a critical mind. That's all I'm going to say. So, about that.
I was really struck by the stuff that you were saying about spouses and appreciating their role and what they do. And it reminded me, I left for a women's retreat when I had, like a 3-month-old and an 18-month-old at home.
Wow.
And I got a text message from my husband, who actually wasn't there when I left. And he was like, you didn't leave me any instructions. And I texted him back and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And he's like, no, thank you. Like, and I was really struck by that. And he talked to me about it when I got home on Sunday. And he was like, what you communicated when you did that was that you really trusted me with our kids. And I was like, okay. And he was like, that really means a lot to me. And so that stuck with me and still sticks with
me.
To think about, what does it look like for me as a wife to affirm that he's doing a good job and that I trust him and to put him in a position where he feels like he can step up and do that stuff and not that he's always going to be like in trouble or not following the rules or doing the right
That's
thing.
Great.
And so I thought that was really cool and it challenged me a lot to think about what do I communicate as a wife to my husband
That's
and
great.
The area of our kids.
Cool. Yes, ma'am.
another book, Open Hearts, Open Home. I think that's what it's called. It's modeling hospitality with your kids.
Great.
I don't remember who the author is, but yeah. I'll using your family as a ministry.